So I'm going to launch two poll questions. And when these things pop up, there will be a brand new window sort of floating in the middle of your screen. And I will ask the audience to go ahead and review the options and click on one that best matches your particular response and then submit it. And I am doing that just to buy a little bit more time. And then in just a moment here, I will close the poll out and we can talk a little bit to see how you all are responding in your connection location. So this is your last remaining moment. I'm about to hit the end poll button now. And so let's take a look at those results. And it does look like we have a large turnout. Almost a quarter of you are coming from the central US, but we have strong representations from actually all over the US. So Northeast, Southeast, Northwest, and Southwest US. And we do possibly have other members, perhaps other international attendees joining us, but the bulk of us are from the United States. So I appreciate that. One more question here, and that's just to learn a little bit about your professional background. So there will now be a new poll that pops up on the screen. And as I'm collecting the responses for this last poll, I'll go ahead and ask Elise Linus if she could turn on her screen share and get her slides ready, and then I'll confirm that we're able to see those. But for those of you, as you're scrolling through those options in this second poll asking what best describes your profession, go ahead and try to pick the one that is most applicable for you. And if there's any problems with that, you're just going to have to just make a hard decision. I promise there's no wrong answer here. Any answer will be helpful. And it looks like those answers have slowed down. So let me go ahead and close it out and share the results with you all. And it looks like a very large chunk of you are either state, local, or tribal governments. And then we have a number of federal employees on the line. But we do have some environmental consultants and economic development professionals, planners, and people who identify as other. So thanks very much for helping us learn a little bit more about you. So I see Elise's slides up front and center. I see you on video. So Elise, I'll go ahead and let you unmute and I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Thank you so much, Jean. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Elise Salinas, and I work at US EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C., in the Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization. So with that, I just have a few slides I wanted to take us through before we get to today's presentations. So before I turn things over to them, I'd like to briefly go over the purpose of this call and what we plan to cover. So EPA funds each of the four organizations that are presenting today through grants, so communities can access these technical assistance resources for free. So the goal of this webinar is to help communities and stakeholders with brownfields know that these resources are available and they're easily accessible. It's easy to contact these TA providers, and you don't have to be a brownfields grantee to receive this assistance. So we'll also have plenty of time, as Jean mentioned. You can submit your questions in the Q&A box, and for questions that are applicable to the entire audience, I'll read those out loud during the breaks in between presentations so we can have the presenters answer those out loud. And let's see. So today we have four presenters, as I mentioned. So Groundwork USA, which provides support for incorporating equitable development and environmental justice principles in communities with brownfields. We also have the Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute, which provides technical assistance to EPA's brownfields job training, both grantees and prospective grantees. And we also have Kansas State University and Center for Creative Land Recycling, which are both technical assistance to brownfields or TAB providers. And I'll talk a little bit more about TAB providers on our next slide. So EPA's TAB providers, like KSU and SeaClear, offer technical assistance to communities and stakeholders to help address their brownfield sites and to increase understanding and involvement in brownfields cleanup, revitalization, and reuse. And EPA's TAB providers are broken down by region, but they all work closely together. We didn't want to overwhelm folks with too many speakers on this webinar, so KSU and SeaClear are the only two TAB providers presenting today. But they will be presenting broadly on TAB resources. So KSU specifically works with tribes and EPA regions 5, 6, 7, and 8, and SeaClear works with communities in regions 9 and 10. But if you are in EPA regions 1, 2, 3, or 4, those providers are listed on the left side of the slide here. And it's definitely still worth listening in. This presentation will help you learn about the general services offered by all TAB providers. And we also encourage you, if you are in regions 1, 2, 3, or 4, you can check out the website for your respective TAB provider here, and feel free to reach out to the contacts that are listed on this slide. So after we finish our introductions, we'll move on to first the presentation from Groundwork USA, followed by the presentation from HMTRI, and then KSU and CCLEAR will present last. So each presentation will be about 10 minutes, and we'll have a few minutes in between each for some question and answer. And then we'll also have time at the end of the webinar to answer any final questions that we didn't have a chance to get to during the presentation. All right, and without any further ado, I'd like to introduce today's presenters. So I'm the moderator, Elise Salinas, and first up we'll have Jaleesa Gilmore, Manager of Equity and Resilience Programs with Groundwork USA. After Jaleesa, we'll have Josh Webb from HMPRI, the ATEEC AVR Center Director is his title. And then followed by Blaise Levin from Kansas State University. He's the TAB Program Coordinator, and Claire Weston is the Programs and Operations Manager from CCLEAR. So with that, I will turn things over to Jaleesa. And if you'd like to bring up your slides, please feel free to do so.
Perfect. Great, thanks. Hi, everyone. I'm Jaleesa Gilmore. I'm a manager of equity and resilience programs at Groundwork USA. I just want to thanks the EPA for inviting me to share Groundwork USA's technical assistance resources that we offer today. And so during my presentation, I'll tell you a little bit about Groundwork USA, who we are, and our technical assistance offerings. And so Groundwork USA is a national network of 22 local community organizations called TRUST throughout the country, from California to Louisiana to New York. And we're all working to advance health equity and resilience in these communities. And so based predominantly in low and moderate income neighborhoods and communities of color, these communities have a disproportionate amount of brownfields, environmental contamination and pollution, as well as a lack of environmental amenities like trees and parks. So working hand in hand with residents through inclusion, meaningful engagement, and collaboration, Groundwork is working to transform the natural and built environment of their communities from within. And so, as I mentioned, we're part of a network of 22 trusts around the country, many of whom are doing brownfield work, restoring these spaces into public assets like urban farms, community gardens, educational spaces, and parks. And so these projects are really designed to ensure that the community is central to every aspect of the development process, ensuring equity, inclusion, and meaningful engagement. And so you may be asking, what's the link between brownfields and environmental justice? Why are we talking about this in terms of equitable development? And so that's for a couple of reasons. One, it helps to write the history of injustice. Historical harm and past policy failures have shaped the lived experiences and physical environments of so many of the communities that we're working in. So the disinvestment, marginalization, and limited access to opportunities that led to these brownfields being disproportionately located in these communities of color are the conditions that we're working with and engaging in right now. So equitable development is a way to recognize and repair past harms and recognizing that these communities know what's best. It also responds to community needs. So it speaks to the reality instead of perceptions. So these land reactivation or reuse projects, they focus on utilizing vacant land or blighted land to meet pressing community needs, whether that's combating food insecurity, flooding, an urban heat island, to filling the gap for recreational and job training needs. Being able to respond to directly what the community needs, you can focus on what they actually want and what they feel like their communities need. And lastly, it leads to wiser, stronger, stable solutions. And so I'm showing this before and after picture on the left from one of our trusts in Lawrence, Massachusetts. And it's just really highlighting the massive potential that these brownfield sites have with the right team, alignment, and resources and patients. And Groundwork Trusts have really shown what can happen when people work together and build a shared vision for the future. And so we're lucky enough to be funded by the EPA to offer equitable development, technical assistance. And so as part of that program, we provide three different resources. So one is a visual resource library that has guides to demonstrate community engagement and aspects of the redevelopment process. The second one is a series of workshops and trainings to build local capacity for incorporating equitable development and environmental justice principles into brownfield projects. The third is we provide direct one-on-one technical assistance to approximately 25 clients nationwide based on their self-identified needs as they relate to a few key areas. And so I want to share a little bit about the resource library. So we've already developed a number of ready-to-go tools and resources that are available on our website. And these are just some examples on the right. We have a Brownfields to Parks guide, best practices and action plans, and even a graphic novel style guide, all centering on equity and justice. And throughout this program, we'll be updating the resource library with new materials. And we also offer workshops. So we'll be offering a series of 12 workshops and trainings on equitable development and environmental justice. And our first workshop was on community development done right, putting environmental justice and equity into action. And so this was a virtual workshop where we identified strategies to meaningfully implement environmental justice and equity and explain how to determine if you actually achieved your equitable development goals. And so now I'll share a little bit about our actual direct technical assistance offerings. So we offer direct one-on-one client technical assistance for communities with brownfields throughout the country. So we work with municipalities, nonprofits, community groups, as well as a multi-stakeholder partnerships. And that's what this map on the left is showing, who we worked with before. And so I just want to share a little bit about our engagement process. So first, you know, we work with our clients, get background information on their site. We want to know what's the history of the site, who are the stakeholders involved. Then we spend some time actually getting to know our clients and finding out what their needs are, what are your community values. And then, you know, we also want to get residents on board so it can really be a holistic picture of what the community needs. And then we'll actually determine what services they actually need, and we'll develop something that's appropriate for them, or we'll connect them with the appropriate resources. And so I'll talk about what types of services we actually provide in the next slide. So we provide a bunch of different technical assistance services, and it's not limited to this list, but I'll share a little bit about it. So the first one is building stakeholder capacity to integrate principles of equity and environmental justice into all phases of the brownfield process. So we'll help brownfield stakeholders develop concrete methods of incorporating equity and evaluating equity and environmental justice principles into brownfield planning, reuse, and even programming. And so this is just really, what do you need to do in all the different phases? What are actually the principles of environmental justice and equitable development that you should be using? The next one is enhancing community engagement. So helping build the technical capacity to meaningfully engage a broad coalition of stakeholders in service of equitable development and environmental justice. And so this can look like, how do you actually talk to people in the community? What does it mean to be meaningfully engaged? We also support with vision building, shared leadership, and decision making. So how do you work with a diverse multi-generational coalition of stakeholders to build a shared vision for site reuse. And once a vision is decided upon, how do you engage stakeholders in meaningful shared leadership and decision-making that keeps them involved in the life of the project and leads to just outcomes? So how do you get folks to the table? What is actually shared leadership and decision-making, and how to talk about values and how that can keep people engaged in the long run? We also help with setting, evaluating, and communicating progress on environmental justice and equitable development goals. So how do you set achievable yet ambitious environmental justice and equitable development goals? How do you track, measure, evaluate, and communicate progress on these goals to stakeholders, partners, funders, and local institutions? We also provide community resilience in the face of climate change. So how do you use the lessons of social, economic, pandemic, and the climate crisis to integrate increased resilience into brownfield redevelopment plans? And so what are the climate risks? How do you use these parcels of land to actually mitigate the climate crisis? And we also help with using area-wide maps to develop a land reuse strategy that prioritizes community needs. And then I also want to highlight that we do have a partnership with a tap provider, Center for Creative Land Recycling, or CCLEAR, and they just help with topics that we may not be as familiar with, and I'm sure you'll hear all about them from Claire. And so with that, I just want to say, if you have a brownfield project that you have in mind, feel free to reach out. This is the team, Kate Mingoy, our Director of Capacity Building, and my fellow Manager of Equity and Resilience Programs, John Balanch. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jaleesa. So we do have a couple questions. So first, I would like to ask, what is the process to apply for Groundwork USA's technical assistance?
Yeah, so we recently created a technical assistance intake form, and so I can send the link at some point, but it's just a short form where we just hear a little bit more about your organization or local government or whoever the client is and what your project is, some of the goals that you have, if you have anything in particular that you need assistance with, and you just fill out the form and then we'll get back to you as soon as we receive it. And then that's it. It's a really simple process, just filling out the form.
Great. Thank you. So another question that we have, does Groundwork USA provide free technical assistance to tribes in Alaska?
Yes, we can provide technical assistance to tribes in Alaska.
I think this question may have come up. I know tribes in Alaska are often represented by Alaska Native corporations, and our grants programs have some, requirements there. But yes, this technical assistance can work with tribes in Alaska.
Thanks, Elise.
Okay. Great. And we just have one last question. How many clients can Groundwork USA support at one time?
So there's a team of three of us, and we can each take on about three clients at one time. So a full engagement would look like nine clients at once, but some of them are shorter and some of them are longer. So it really rotates in and out. But the maximum would be nine, but we're ready to go and accept new clients all the time.
Great. All right, well, I think that's all for now for questions. If you think of anything else, everybody out there listening, please feel free to submit a question and we can always answer it later on during another Q&A break. All right, so thank you so much again, Jaleesa. And next, we will move on to HMTRI's presentation and Josh Webb will be leading that for us.
All right. Thank you, Elise. And what a wonderful presentation, Jaleesa. I'm going to jump right in here and introduce myself again. My name is Josh Webb, and I serve as the Center Director for the ATEC Center here at Eastern Iowa Community Colleges and Program Manager over the HMTRI program. I joined the ATEC organization really as a project manager overseeing various training application development projects in which we have been providing resources to our local brownfield site here in Davenport, Iowa, known as Nahant Marsh, as well as to all of our providers within the environmental technical or environmental technology umbrella. And we've also, as you can see, we've got a very small team here. Corey Patzer serves as our coordinator and takes care of our administrative duties. And last but not least, Steve Fenton and Mike Sanu have been around since the inception of the program back in 1994. And it's because of these two gentlemen that we're able to offer the types of services that we do with, again, their knowledge and expertise, the relationships that they've formed and kept over the years. And it's what really kind of drives our mission. As you can see here, we've got a kind of a high-level overview of the services we provide. But before we get into that, we've got an overview on the right, or a picture that shows our current 44 grantee locations, as well as some of our past recipient locations. So you can see that we're spread apart all over the nation, which is wonderful. And it's because of services like this that, you know, these exist. So I'm going to jump right into kind of our hub, if you will, the brownfieldstoolbox.org website. And that really, again, serves as our repository and our key link in communication with any participants or grantees. So on our website, folks can come and find our professional recordings and, you know, the post-session shorts from our PLC, in addition to any recordings that we have throughout the year from all grantee meetings, webinars, and workshops. We've got a certified employee finder, which I'll go more into here in just a moment, social media directory, grant recipient directory, access to best practices. And then I think what makes HMTR special and all of these organizations is staying on top of all of the core and relevant topics that are engaging in the world today. So whether it's the impact of COVID-19, you know, the best training strategies and so forth, we make sure to stay on top of that and deliver that to our network. And we receive roughly 10,000 visits a year to the website. So no small undertaking there. The next form of communication would be our listserv. And it, again, serves as a conduit not only for HMTRI to make announcements and kind of reach out to the community, but it really serves as a way for EPA grantees and stakeholders to also use us and, you know, reaching out to our network. Again, whether it's for registrations for events like this or general questions, and that's roughly sitting at about 560 members. And if anyone's interested in joining or posting the listserv, you can see the HMTRI at EICC email address listed there. Moving on, as I mentioned, we'll host an annual all grantee meeting, usually a much larger event in which we can network, brainstorm, we can connect with our EPA regional coordinators. And this is really where we can begin that peer-to-peer mentoring and networking, the sharing of best practices. And that's facilitated also throughout the year, as I mentioned. We have supplemental workshops. For example, here in November, we will be having a brainstorming and networking conference in which everybody or grant recipients will be able to meet with the regional coordinators. We'll have a few keynote speakers, and these type of events are critical to kind of maintaining our mission of providing that assistance. Moving on, as I mentioned, we have the professional learning community. Again, these are bi-weekly calls, typically facilitated by Mike and Steve, with roughly 520 active members. There have been over 260 calls since the inception of the program. And again, a large focus on relevant topics. So whether it's a new RFA coming out from EPA or presentations from different forums and different grantees, we welcome all of that. So, and again, those are all posted. They're up within a few days of the actual conference, and those are posted directly to the website. So anybody can go back, reference those, and have direct access to that information. And then the mentor link, this is just as it implies. As I mentioned, Mike and Steve have built quite a network. And so we have program managers and both former and current grantees who are willing to share their experiences, help develop that peer-to-peer engagement, and just walk through, you know, any of the pitfalls or any of the common questions or things that might come up throughout the process. And that's really kind of critical, and I think provides that intimate dialogue, which can really help prospective grantee recipients. And then, as I mentioned, the Certified Employee Finder, this is a way for us to help ensure graduate placement. So as you can see on the right, we have an example of the form here that can be printed off as a PDF, full access on the website as well. And we conduct a couple scans a year to keep this information current and relevant. And what you'll notice is all the technical curriculum supported is listed there, along with additional training and services that they might be provided. And so this is just a directory in which they can quickly go through all of our grantee recipients and have, you know, quick access to this information. And I want to close really with a few questions and some guiding thoughts. A lot of our technical services obviously focused around communication and being able to provide all of this information to those in need. And currently, as I mentioned, that's done through our PLC, done through Listserv. But we're looking at and we're trying to identify new trends in which we could better reach this audience and looking at new strategies for community and employer awareness. So what I mean by that is we're looking at things such as a Slack integration or a new piece of technology that might allow us to more seamlessly interact with, again, our network. Maybe that's Microsoft Teams, Zoom, but I'd love to see your feedback in the chat as to how you think we could better facilitate, you know, some of that awareness and getting that information out to the network. And then really at the end of the day, we're trying to assist communities in establishing these job training programs. So any way that we can better serve that, I would love to hear on that as well. And then in closing, again, my name is Josh Webb. You can reach me directly. If you have questions for any of the team members, you can reach out directly to hmtri@eicc.edu. And again, there's the website link.
Great. Thank you so much, Josh. All right. So we have a couple questions for you. So the first question is, how can HMTRI promote job training graduates on a national level?
Yeah, that's really a question for the audience. Again, we're looking at how we can better disseminate information, how we can better network, you know, graduates to, you know, employers and what that might look like. Really, that's a call for, you know, any direction. So in order for us to stay with the times and remain relevant and provide the services that we do, we would love to hear from, you know, the audience and see how we can better facilitate that.
Okay, great. Thanks. And one other question. How do you work with, how do you work with job training applicants who may not have a grant already, but they're interested in applying for an EPA Brownfield job training grant?
Sure. So typically throughout the year at our biweekly PLC meetings, we'll cover a variety of topics, criteria for the RFAs, and so much more. And then really if they want to have more engaged conversations and get down to a more detailed level, we're willing to facilitate that. We won't help with the actual grant writing process, but we will kind of guide that process and provide insight. Again, link them with other individuals have applied for similar opportunities and let them discuss, you know, pitfalls, things to avoid, what to look for. So again, it's really about kind of controlling the network and providing the essential resources as needed.
Great, thanks. And we had one other question come in just now. Are you planning any virtual networking sessions? Zoom networking sessions would be helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving forward, I think there's a fine line. Everybody wants to return to life as normal and get back to in-person conferences. Obviously, that's kind of a delicate and tricky situation. We find that a lot of people are actually kind of burnt out of a lot of the virtual conferences. But yes, I think that's something we would take into consideration and be more than happy to help facilitate more brainstorming and networking sessions virtually. In fact, I'd love to hear more if anyone wants to reach out and discuss that opportunity.
Great. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our questions for now. So thank you so much, Josh. And next up, we will have Blaise and Claire presenting on tab resources.
Hello, everybody. Blaise Levin here from the Kansas State University Technical Assistance to Brownfields program, or TAB program. Next slide, Claire. I'm joined by Claire Weston with the Center for Creative Land Recycling. We're both going to tell you a little bit about the TAB program, what we do, et cetera. And we're talking on behalf of the other six TAB providers. So the bottom line is, the bottom line is I'm going to actually turn my camera off to share a little bandwidth because I'm in a remote location. But the bottom line, the TAB program assists communities and tribes with the brownfields redevelopment process by providing free planning, environmental, and economic development expertise free of charge because we're supported by a number of EPA grants. Next slide. The six TAB providers are shown on this slide. Kansas State University supports communities and tribes in regions 5 through 8 in the kind of the middle of the country, purple colored. Claire's group, CCLEAR, supports the Western United States in regions 9 and 10. And then the four other TAB providers, University of Connecticut supports region 1, NJIT, that's New Jersey Institute of Technology, supports Region 2. West Virginia University supports Region 3. And the International City County Managers Association supports communities in Region 4. If you download these slides, the color-coded bullets there that Claire is highlighting are links to contact information and web pages for each TAB, so please reach out to them and get help if you're interested. Next slide. Kansas State University also hosts the Tribal Technical Assistance to Brownfields program, or Tribal TAB, and it's a national program, so it does support tribes in Alaska and anywhere else in the United States with tribal partners. Next. Please, Claire, you'll have to do it twice. There you go. It features, like any TAB work, you know, we all do workshops, webinars, one-on-one support, but the tribal TAB actually has a big emphasis on peer-to-peer learning. So tribal mentoring, growth in the environmental professional community. And there's a website that's a peer-to-peer forum that I'll tell you about in a second. Next slide, please. In the tribal work, and really as all of us TAB providers and speakers today would say, I'm sure, is it's important when we do our work with communities, no matter what kind of community, that we take a close look at the community, get to know them, understand their leadership structure, what matters to them. And this is just a good example in the tribal work, where cultural resources, community values, belief systems are just huge. You can't work with the community and help them achieve their redevelopment goals without understanding that. Next slide. And so in the big picture, we help with the brownfields redevelopment process, advice and coaching. Okay, so those three steps of the redevelopment process are 1, planning. 2, getting the environmental risks addressed. And 3, implementing a community's redevelopment plan. And under item 1, if you can go back, Claire, please, thanks. Planning involves a lot of what Jaleesa was talking about, But that's identifying and inventorying the brownfields that the community wants to use to redevelop to meet their community improvement goals. The second step of addressing environmental risks involves getting the environmental assessments done for those properties and getting them cleaned up if cleanup is needed. And then the third step is working with the stakeholders and partners who made the plan to start with in step one, getting financial resources, getting that redevelopment project implemented and completed on the ground. Next slide. So there's a laundry list here you can read of the services we provide, but about the first half of them have to do with supporting that first step, planning. It's important to have a plan, right? To know where you're going in a redevelopment project. We help with the community engagement, the identifying, inventorying brownfields. We'll even also help you look for funding. And once you get funding, help you find and work with environmental consultants that do a lot of the environmental assessment and cleanup work, and so on and so forth. Next slide. And by the way, Claire will be talking about examples, giving examples of that's kind of the one-on-one assistance we give, right, directly to communities on their projects. I'm going to finish by talking about a few national tools, nationwide scope tools that K-State runs in collaboration with the other tabs. And so the first tool I'll tell you about is the Brownfields Inventory Tool. That's to help you, again, kind of make an internal, not public-facing inventory of potential brownfield sites that you can prioritize and plug into your redevelopment plans. The website, I think maybe if you click again, you might get a URL to come up, Claire. Oh, actually it's on the slide there there it is right there. So next slide. I'll also mention on the inventory tool, there's a phone app that you can use out in the field to, you know, take pictures, log locations of potential sites you want to use that interface with kind of the online web browser version of the inventory tool. The second tool we have is the TabEZ grant writing tool to help applicants draft assessment and cleanup proposals. Next slide. And in addition to that tool being available for you to use, we also review those applications if you're interested, whether you've used TabEZ or not to draft them. And as it turns out right now, we're in the midst of an assessment, cleanup, and revolving loan fund application period. And if you give your TAB providers a little advance notice, like maybe at least a week, if possible, that you'd like to have them review your proposal, we can usually turn them around in several days. And it's a good idea. The earlier you get your draft to us, the better review we can provide. So think about that. Also, there's links in this slide to recent EPA and TAB webinars with helpful tips and tricks and more information on you know, preparing to write good proposals. University of Connecticut will be doing a webinar soon on a web tool that's extra helpful in writing those grants as well. So please check those links out if you're in the running for a MARC application this year. Next slide. We also post past successful applications on our website. Again, the website's on the slide. So take a look at those if you're writing applications this time around to get an idea of what's worked in the past. We also have a state resources directory that we collaborate with the other tabs on, where you can click any state and get contact information for the state brownfields program, contacts that you need to know and work through, as well as state-specific funding sources and other resources. So very good compilation of resources there if you're getting into brownfields redevelopment. Next slide. And last, I'll tell you a little bit about the Tribal Brownfields Forum. That's part of the Tribal Tab effort we host, and in partnership with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. This is a peer-to-peer networking platform that's tribes only or tribal environmental only individuals that participate in a number of discussion threads. Next, Claire. That are organized around the different tribal response program topics. So there's subject matter experts, and many of whom are tribal environmental professionals that can ask questions among their peers, post useful examples of things. And so if you're working in that arena, we sure encourage you to check that out. I think that might be it for my part of the bigger picture things, and I'll turn it over to Claire, who will talk more about one-on-one examples of support. Thanks, Claire.
Yeah, thank you so much, Blaise, and thank you all for joining us here today. In developing this presentation, Blaise and I thought it would be a good exercise to go through, we're calling them inquiry response examples, right? So common inquiries that we get and a potential response that we might give, a way forward, some next steps. Blaise, I encourage you to chime in at any point if you want to add some context or a case study or that sort of thing. Let's keep this pretty free flowing. So these next slides align pretty closely with that laundry list that Blaise went over really, really quickly earlier on in the presentation. So we're going to dive deeper into that laundry list is sort of the intention here. So starting off with one of the first things in brownfield redevelopment process, I mean, the process is not linear, as many of you know, a lot of these steps sort of overlap with each other, but let's start sort of at the beginning with identification and prioritization. So a common inquiry is, a lot of brownfields in my community, how do I systematically and efficiently identify and prioritize sites for redevelopment? So your tag provider can absolutely assist you with this. We can help you plan the best approach to developing an inventory of your sites. And this can come in different forms. This might be as simple as setting up an Excel sheet and putting data into that Excel sheet that can help you quantify which sites to prioritize by assigning scores on different prioritization factors like cleanup risk or ease of access or economic incentives. These are all factors that should be part of your decision-making in prioritizing your sites. And then we can also help you access existing local government databases with helpful data. And Blaise already mentioned the Brownfields inventory tool and how that can be useful for this as well. So we can help you through this early part of the process. So next, one of the common inquiries we get have to do with phase two environmental site assessments. So one of the things that your TAB provider can do for you is review plans and technical reports. So I'm just going to talk about phase two as an example of one of those. So phase two environmental site assessment, just completed on some site, and you're having trouble interpreting the results or knowing where to go from here. We can help you go through that report. We can help you look through it, interpret the results, and we can facilitate a meeting with your phase two contractor. If that's warranted, if that might be helpful, we can absolutely play that role, and we can help you tease out some tangible next steps after that phase two. This does come up fairly frequently. All of your TAP providers have resources on phase two environmental site assessments. I did just want to draw attention to this one resource. Center for Creative Land Recycling recently put an entire panel together on this exact issue in our New York State Redevelopment Summit. The link to the full broadcast is here. We go through a case study with the Finger Lakes Land Bank, and it's a deep dive into this issue, so I encourage you to check that out. So one of the big pieces of the redevelopment process, as you've heard multiple times at this point, because it is so important, and Jaleesa really went into this, is strategic planning and visioning and how that relates to community engagement. So often people will approach us and they are just stuck. There's a site, it's been vacant for a really long time, it's not moving, they're just completely stuck, no one will touch it, and they want to know how to get it addressed in some way. So often what we will recommend as TAB providers to you is that you convene a public reuse visioning session. Jaleesa talked about this. This is an important piece of the equitable redevelopment process, right? Because you're involving the community stakeholders and making sure that their voices are heard, to bring as many stakeholders and different voices to the table as possible. So we can assist you in this process. And some of the typical products of these workshops include rank order list of use interests. So these are end uses, renderings and sketches of what the site could look like. All of the different tab providers do approach this in a slightly different way, but the basics are the same. It's always a very collaborative and engaging process. I wanted to highlight this one case study, and Blaze, chime in if you want to talk a little bit more about what KSU has done in this regard. But one thing that CCLEAR did recently, and you know, this past year and a half has been really challenging, as we've discussed, for a number of reasons, but for particularly for in-person workshops. So this case study that is linked here in the slide, Vision to Action, Building Consensus Through Digital Engagement, is an example of a visioning session that was conducted completely online, using online tools and digital engagement strategies. So that's kind of an interesting case that I encourage you to check out, but we've got lots of other case studies on this strategic planning and visioning and community engagement workshops. So another piece of this redevelopment puzzle, a really important piece, is looking at the economic market and feasibility analysis and determining what types of end uses are appropriate for the area. Okay, so the question that commonly comes up is, how can I get a feel for what types of businesses might be interested in redeveloping a property in town, right? And your town provider can help you navigate this question, and that might include performing a business opportunity analysis for a site or area of sites, and this might be based on demographics and economic factors. And the point here is to determine what kind of businesses could successfully operate in the area, and making sure that what is being supported by the market aligns with the preferred end use. So this also might include engaging your local stakeholders so that you can get the most accurate data to determine what the market looks like, as well as engaging those stakeholders so that you can streamline the process. Oh boy, redevelopment funding. This is a really big one. So I think this is probably the most common inquiry we get across the board. And it's a pretty simple question. It's, how am I going to pay for all of this? So redevelopment funding can be confusing. It can be overwhelming. But the question is, how do you build a robust capital stack and fill funding gaps? So we can certainly help you address this in a number of ways. I'm going to pick on two real quick. So one thing that we might suggest to you is to develop a resource roadmap and a funding matrix so that you can better anticipate and prepare for funding opportunities that knit together into a creative capital stack. Now, there's another number of other things that we'll do to help you with funding. And one of the big ones, which have been discussed a couple times so far, is that we keep our ear to the ground on new funding opportunities and new financing strategies. And we relay those opportunities to you through newsletters, through our website, through our social media. So a big thing that you should do after this webinar is to go and follow all of us on those channels, our website, newsletter, socials, so that you can get the most up-to-date information on those funding opportunities. But back to the resource roadmap, there is a link here about resource roadmaps and why you absolutely need one. I encourage you to go check that out as well. Blaze went over this, applying grants. It bears repeating because it is very important. So the question is, how do you write a competitive EPA MARC grant application? And the answer is pretty straightforward. Have your tab provider review it. We will provide you the tips to really improve your application, make it as responsive and compelling as possible. We can give you tips on content, formatting, tone. Each of the tab providers do this a little differently, but the objective is the same, and that is to improve your odds of winning in a very competitive grant cycle. Reminder that those applications are due December 1st, and there's some links here to recent webinars that go over all of this cycle's sort of tips and tricks. All right, so you've applied. You've applied to a MARC grant application. Maybe you've received it. Congratulations, way to go. Now the work really begins, right? So one of the things that Blaze mentioned is that one of that you'll have to do is finding and evaluating environmental consultants. So I'm going to pick on just this one example here. How do I write and disseminate an RFP or RFQ that effectively attracts qualified firms and contractors? We can absolutely help you with this. We can help you review your RFP and RFQ. We can help you understand the federal procurement process. And we can help you brainstorm the appropriate channels to disseminate that RFP and RFQ so that the contractors that really need to see this are seeing it, right? So we can go over that with you and help you brainstorm those effective channels. So finally, one of the last pieces of this process, and they do overlap, so you know there's no linear process here, but this is definitely one of the last pieces, is developer engagement. So your property is ready for development. How do I attract a developer? One of the things that we think that you should do is contact us and just tell us about your site. What are its assets? What's the market like? If you're unsure on that one, go back a few slides and take a look at that. What remediation is still necessary, if any? So what are the deficiencies? It is good to be transparent about that. Developers don't like surprises. But by assembling these details, we can help you draft a fact sheet that relays key information about the site, which is invaluable for a number of reasons, but one of which is for attracting developers. So those are all my inquiry response examples. And the application process for TAB assistance does vary by TAB provider, but the basic point is, you know, that you contact us. We talk about your needs and your inquiries. We agree on a course of action, and then we get started. It's pretty straightforward. And just here's a reminder of the different TAB regions and who your TAB provider is based on where you're located. And then I threw a lot at you, Blaze threw a lot at you. We've thrown a lot at you in this in the course of this webinar. So if there's one thing that you do after this webinar, one actionable item, it is to sign up for our newsletters. So these are all live links, and you do have access to this presentation. As you know, these are all live links. If you click on them, you will be able to directly sign up for each of these entities' newsletters. And I also include Groundwork USA and HMTRI down here. I really love learning about their services. They do some great work, so definitely follow them as well. And I believe that is it for us. So I'll stop sharing.
Great. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Blaze. We did have a couple questions come up in the chat, so I will ask you those first. So the first question was, for developing brownfield inventories, do TAB providers help walk the local entity through the process and provide insight into how to actually collect the data and find sites? Or do TAB providers just provide the tools? So how much hand-holding is involved, basically, is the question.
I can go first. We can, you know, hand-hold as much as the community wants for the most part. The whole key for inventorying brownfields is finding the brownfields, you know, which sites meet a brownfields definition that the community wants to, you know, redevelop actually. And then what are the characteristics needed for the redeveloped site? And so when you think about it ahead of time before you start inventorying, we can do that. And then you can prioritize those sites, and you can use BID if you want, you can use Excel if you want, but we can advise a lot. Claire, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just repeat that. Yeah, there's a decent bit of handholding if that's what you feel like you need. We can help you develop that sort of methodology behind the whole thing. It's definitely not use this Excel sheet and fill it out. We can take you through the whole process.
Great, thanks. Another question we have is, how much time on average do you spend working with an entity that requests technical assistance?
It varies. Some people are, you know, and we get, it depends on how much experience that folks have. You know, some have a lot, some don't have so much. Sometimes we'll have an hour long you know, consultation call or an hour-long visit about something or a few hours reviewing a MARC grant. Other times we'll work off and on with a community for years and years. So even as they progress in their capacity. So I'll say that's what I'll say. Claire, go ahead.
Yeah, it's definitely very variable. I mean, I think and there are a number of communities that CCLEAR has worked with that, you know, we kind of touch base with them just as a best practice every quarter, maybe that sort of thing, just to see, because it's a very long process, the redevelopment process, as you're likely well aware, is very long, takes years and years. And there's a lot of steps involved. And so sometimes it is a one-off technical assistance. We answer a question and that's sort of it. Other times we have a relationship for years, as Blaise has said.
Great, thanks. And one last question before we open it up to the audience, if anybody wants to ask live questions. So the last question, are you able to write grants in addition to reviewing them?
No, we're not able to write grants. We can sure show you examples of good grants. We can review your grants. We can, you know, the reviews look like a pretty thorough markup, but we don't do too much actual, you know, we don't edit your writing too much. We provide, you know, suggestions. Well, why don't you try this or here, you know, flip things around, whatever, but we do some pretty thorough review work, but we can't do the writing.
Yeah, the main thing that we would recommend is that you start early and give as much time to sort of do multiple revisions as possible, because that makes all the difference. And really the key with the EPA MARC grants especially is just you really have to be responsive, because they are very competitive. And so the question that is being asked, you have to make sure you are really, truly answering it as completely and efficiently as possible.
We can review a draft more than once. So
absolutely.
The earlier you get them in, the more thorough reviews you're going to get.
So I do have one more question that came in related to that. Can you provide an idea of the turnaround time on the technical assistance feedback on applying? And if they send you a grant application draft, obviously there's a short window of time to prepare applications and get that submitted. So what's your turnaround time?
I'll say K-State likes to do it within 3 days. Sometimes it's one day, but we like to get them back within 3 days. That's our goal.
Yeah, I would echo that. It does depend a little bit on like the day that the reviewer gets them and what they've got on their plate that day. You know, sometimes it's in a matter of hours. It's like, oh, I have 3 hours. Let's just do it now. And then, so it depends, but certainly no more than 3 days.
Great. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you both. I think, at this point, we might want to open it up to general questions for any of the providers. And before you give your spiel on that, Jean, I did want to answer a couple general questions that did come up during the presentations today. So one of them, somebody was asking, how are these resources able to be provided for free? And I just wanted to reiterate that EPA has awarded a grant to each one of these organizations. So EPA provides funding to these organizations to provide these free resources and TA or technical assistance that they talked about. And because EPA is paying, you don't have to, communities do not have to pay. And one other quick thing that came up, someone was asking, since the National Brownfields Training Conference was postponed, they were asking if there was any chance that the assessment revolving loan fund and cleanup grants, the deadline would be extended. No, there is no chance that the deadline will be extended. The application deadline is not related to the training conference. So those applications are still due on December 1st. Please make sure to get your applications in on time. And with that, Jean, did you want to remind folks about the process for asking any questions live?
Absolutely. So I will remind everyone that you can continue to write your questions in using that Q&A window at the bottom of your screen. So if you haven't done so, now is a great time to pop that open and you can keep typing them in. But for those of you who may only be listening on the phone or would prefer to share your questions or comments verbally, I'd like to ask you to raise your hand. So in the Zoom webinar environment, if you are online, you should see a nice yellow hand raise button at the bottom that you can click on to raise your hand. Alternatively, if you are on the telephone lines, if you press *9 on your phone keypad, that will raise your hand on the phone line and we can call on you and then allow you to unmute to share your question or comment. Now, I do see someone with their hand raised, Elise. So I'm going to go ahead and call on this person. I see a Dean Hargens. So I'm going to allow you to talk. And if you'd like to unmute yourself, Dean, and share your question or comment, go right ahead. And we'll try one more time. Dean, if you're there, you are welcome to unmute and share your question or comment. Okay, we can come back to Dean in a little bit, see if there's any technical issues. Dean, you can always use that Q&A to send in your questions and comments if that's easier for you. For the rest of the participants, if you have no other questions or comments for our speakers, it's also a really equally helpful thing to do to let us know in the Q&A, I have no additional questions, so we can help best manage the last remaining moments of our time. So if you have no questions, type I have no questions in that Q&A. And if you do have questions or comments, you can go ahead and keep typing them into that Q&A. Elise, I do see another participant who has their hand raised. So if it's okay with you, I'm going to call on Mary Mathias. If I have your name wrong, I apologize, Mary. I'm going to hit a button and allow you to unmute yourself and you can share your question or comment.
Sorry, I was going to ask a question.
Oh. Okay, go right ahead.
In the Q&A box, sorry.
Oh, in the Q&A box. Got it. Okay. That, if that's easier, go right ahead, Mary. All right. So I will go ahead and just, again, if you want to speak out loud, that's where you can use that hand raise feature. Otherwise, you can keep typing them in the Q&A box. And I think, Elise, there have been a couple of additional questions that may have come in.
Yes, there have been. So we can ask a couple of those. So one question that came in is, can anyone share a specific brownfield project on native lands in Alaska that they have helped with? And I'm not sure if any of the providers would want to jump in on that. Blaze, I think.
Yeah, sure. I can jump in with a couple quick examples. We do reuse planning assistance, right, for tribes as well. And we've got a really good partner that helps us with that, the Indigenous Design and Planning Institute in University of New Mexico. We've worked together with them to do a couple of projects assisting the Cochiti Pueblo in New Mexico with a reuse plan for an old gravel pit and shooting range, and it was a lot of things. But we've helped them take community input and develop a reuse plan that the community supported for that site. And we've also worked in Gakona, Alaska, supporting their tribal response program with a community engagement meeting to help develop reuse ideas for an area that had been occupied and abandoned by kind of a junk collector on tribal lands. And so those are a couple of instances we've helped. We provide a lot of example cleanup verification plans, you know, all the kinds of documentation that a tribal response program has to provide as they manage their brownfields program. So we provide a lot of examples and for instances on that kind of thing too.
Great, thank you, Blaze. Mm-hmm. So we have one other question that came in the chat. So do any of today's providers offer assistance to cities that need help navigating the property acquisition process?
Go ahead, Claire, if you want, sure. Or I can go.
Why don't you go, Blaze, and I might add on to it.
Okay. Yes, kind of in that whole economic development expertise area, we have real estate economists and developers, horizontal developers as well, that kind of know how that works, and we'll actually work with local governments and tribes who are either brokering or taking on property in property transactions, help them with example term sheets for the deal, all kinds of things. And it's advice. It's not something, we try to put the stakeholders in a position to where they have a direction they want to go. They've decided, yes, let's pursue this kind of approach to attract developers or to deal with this one developer. And then they'll, let their attorneys get involved and really do the fine paperwork that licensed professionals need to do. Claire, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think I would just say that our main role in that realm is to help facilitate conversations and make sure that the stakeholders that need to be at the table are at the table. And so we can play that role of helping you sort of wrangle those different stakeholders and just getting everybody to not necessarily all sit down at the same table physically, but metaphorically. That would probably be our main role on an acquisition case, and also getting you in touch maybe with an attorney and helping you with that as well.
And I'll add too that the market analysis type work we do sometimes in trying to help a community understand how viable a particular end use is, that can, although it's high level, that can be useful to developers and can be used. We can also help the community create kind of a project profile sheet to help market the property and kind of connect them, as Claire was saying, with folks in the legal and development communities and some of the exchanges, information exchanges that they all are following.
And I also just want to add that Groundwork USA can also help with that process. I myself haven't been involved in that process, but our team has.
Great. Thank you, Blaze, Claire, and Jaleesa. So I think we just have one last question that is yet to be answered in the chat. So this question starts out, we are a small municipality and have a building on our square that has been approved for demolition, but was then found it has asbestos. And the quote they got was for around 50K. They don't have that kind of budget. So is there something available between the TA providers that can help them handle this issue and start addressing this site?
I would recommend that you reach out, because it does depend on where you're located, the type of resources and incentives and funding opportunities that are available to you. Because as I don't know if this has been stated specifically, but as TAP providers, we just provide technical assistance. We don't give money. We don't disperse money of any sort. We provide technical assistance. So, but we might be able to point you in the right direction for a funding source that can help with that sort of situation. But again, it's dependent on where you're located and a number of factors.
Yeah, I'd add in just, check that state resources directory, but definitely connect with one of the TABs or other technical assistance providers here, because it just does vary state by state. And but there's usually resources out there, surprisingly, to find. So give us a call.
Yes, definitely. Please reach out to your TAB provider. And we did have one other question come in just now, and this question's for Josh. So Josh, can you please provide more information on the peer-to-peer mentoring? How do folks get connected, and is it nationwide?
Sure. First off, it's most certainly nationwide. It can be facilitated a number of ways. You can email us once we gather some information and learn more about what it is you're needing mentoring on. We can absolutely provide the critical information. We can point you to the listserv PLC. You know, we have a number of ways in which we can help facilitate that, but we would need to gather that information first.
Great. Thank you, Josh. All right. Are there any other live questions that folks would like to ask? If you want to raise your hand, I'm just reading through the questions, making sure that we got to everything. If anyone feels that you still have a question, you know, please feel free to type it in the Q&A box. And if any of you have questions and you want to follow up with any of us after the webinar too, that is also definitely fine. And our emails are on the registration page, along with all the other presentations, links, and resources from today's presentation. I think there's one question that I might have missed earlier. So this one, this person is in the process of writing up an RFP for starting a tribal response program, and they're wondering how they can include technical assistance into their application process because they want to continue building on their program, it sounds like. So they were having some struggles with performance, and they're wondering if they could include technical assistance in their planning.
I'll take that.
Please.
I mean, yes, I think you can, there's a few things you can do. Certainly for free, you know, type technical assistance, you can reach out to TAB. That's our specialty when we work with tribes, is how to build capacity and tribal response programs. So if you're a TRP program, yeah, reach out to us. There's other things, you know, you can do with the funds you get to hire technical expertise to do things. So it kind of, wherever you're trying to build capacity, whether it's in doing environmental work or, you know, maybe it's planning work, or even maybe economic development or cultural redevelopment work, or maybe job training, right? Workforce training, or becoming better at equitable development. You know, you've got Josh and Jaleesa's out there as well to help. And I did want to say, we all work together. We all sometimes work together on the same projects even. So do reach out. I hope that answered the question, the original question.
Thanks, Blaise. And it looks like we have, a caller with their hand up.
Jean. Exactly. Yeah. So Deanna, if you would like to ask your question, let's go ahead and allow you to talk, and you can unmute yourself if you'd like to share your question or comment. And so Deanna, you should see a little microphone option or a pop-up where you're being asked to unmute. And if you've changed your mind, that's okay. You do not have to ask your question out loud. Okay. Well, I don't hear anything on my end, Elise, so I'll turn it back to you to see if there were some final thoughts you wanted to leave people with.
Yeah, we did just have, I think, two last questions that I want to make sure we can address briefly. So one of them, one of the participants has had some difficulty in working with their municipality on brownfields redevelopment. Do you have any suggestions or resources that you can provide to help a community get their municipality more involved?
Do you want to take this, Blaise, maybe you can add on?
Yeah, go ahead, Claire.
I would say that the more on the ball you can be and appear to this stakeholder, the more attention that's gonna bring, and the more seriously they'll take you. So I mean, what I mean by on the ball is a property fact sheet, a resource mode roadmap, a funding matrix, just like really have your ducks in a row in assembling all of the tools for your site and all of the materials for your site. And that can make a big difference in people piquing people's interest, especially when it comes to local government. If you've assembled a good portfolio of resources and information around the site that can make a big difference in engaging some tricky stakeholders.
Yeah, I just add that, have meetings with your community, you know, whoever, if you're a neighborhood group, if it's a whole city, maybe you're a small city. If you're part of a neighborhood organization or a nonprofit, or can convene people and brainstorm, come up with ideas for what it is you want to do. Invite the elected officials, the city, staff type folks. They serve you. So once they see a number of people are interested in the same thing, that usually gets them off the dime. And, I bet Jaleesa could add a few things as well, if you'd like.
Yeah, no, Blaze and Claire, I definitely agree with you. And definitely to your last point about bringing multiple stakeholders in the community on board, I think that also would get the government's attention because, they're accountable to the people who are living and, working in the community. So I think that's also an important piece.
And I'd add quickly too, is that what's good to do with them as well is educate them. And again, that's something TAB can do with workshops or even presentations to city or tribal councils and stuff is say, hey, there's a way to do this. There's money you can apply for. There's resources, people, the town next door has done this, there's all kinds of things you can do to let them know this is pretty easy to do, easy to meet your community's interests. And so that's something we help with sometimes.
Great, thank you. Thank you all. And then our last question for today, what are the best online training resources to help folks get oriented to brownfields? So I think for this question, it might also be important to think about if there's a particular issue related to brownfields that you're working on, if it's general brownfields information or something that's more specific to, equitable development or job training or something of the sort. So I'm not sure if any of you would like to talk about, resources for getting folks oriented on brownfields.
I would suggest you visit TAB provider websites or we have that state resources guide or any of the TAB websites who offer events, right? There's a lot of Brownfields 101 type recorded webinars and you can keyword search them. What's kind of nice to do even if you don't know the question you're trying to ask exactly is just to contact the TAB provider because we can get you probably to what you need as far as getting oriented a lot quicker if we understand a little bit about your situation. So that's something I'd suggest.
And I would also just add the Groundwork USA on our website. We have a Equitable Development Tools webpage where the resource library that I mentioned earlier is on, and we have a bunch of different resources around like inclusive community development, brownfields to bright fields, asset mapping. So there's a bunch of different resources in our resource library on our website.
And I might chime just back in that there is a specific place for just general brownfields orientations, training modules and stuff. It's KSU TAB/ online training. Let me tell you what it is and I'll put it in the chat box. I got flustered. Hang on.
And if you're ever, looking for any of these resources and you're not sure where to start, you can reach out to any of us and we'd be happy to help follow up with you and send you any direct links if there's a specific type of training you're looking for or anything like that.
Yeah, I support that. And I would say that, on CCLEAR's end, our current website, we're switching websites in like a week. Our current website, there's a section called Brownfields 101. And on our new website, there is going to be a section called Getting Started. So there are, that's how you would navigate that. Those are specifically resources that we feel are best for people that are early in the process or very new to brownfields.
All right. Well, I think that answers all the questions that we had in the chat. Once again, you know, feel free to follow up with any of us if you have any additional questions or anything. Thank you all so much for joining us, and thank you so much to all of our presenters for sharing today. And I will turn things over to Jean.
All right, thank you so very much. I'm going to walk us through just a few quick final reminders before we close things out today. So the first thing I wanted to remind you that you can absolutely stay connected with us at the Cleanup Information Network or cluein.org. We have a variety of podcasts, RSS newsfeed, monthly newsletters, for example, Tech Direct. We send that out on the first of each month. I strongly encourage you sign up, and you can be alerted to sessions like today's and other technical webinars related to hazardous waste sites. Another quick reminder, I know that some of you were looking for copies of the presentation slides, as well as the websites and various resources that were highlighted by our presenters. Remember, we created a unique website. It's called the seminar homepage. You would have used that when you signed up. You used it to check in for today's session. And on that homepage, we have tabs all along the top, which will have links to the slides and related resources and the presentation materials. So you can find them already posted up there along with information about our speakers. So feel free to bookmark that and reference it at a later time. There also is a tab to the feedback form, because one of the most common questions I get as a technical moderator is if we offer CEUs or PDHs for these webinars. While we do not issue those types of credit hours, we can provide you with a certificate of participation that you can use for your own records or documentation. So if you would like one of those certificates, simply fill out the feedback form and make sure you check the box at the bottom of that form certifying you were here for the entire session and that you would like a certificate. And then as soon as you send in your feedback, you'll immediately have access to a certificate that you can download or print out or even save for your own records. If you participated as a group, each person can fill out that feedback form on their own, even if you didn't all individually register. So if you shared or did a little viewing party at your location, I simply ask that you share the link to that feedback form with those who joined at your location so that they can give us their own thoughts and get their own certificate. And if you are looking for the recording from today's session, that will be available in approximately 1 week. Everyone who registered for the broadcast will automatically get an email when that archive is available for on-demand playback. But if you sign up for some of our other newsletter services or podcast services, you may find out sooner than they do as soon as we post that item online. So you can look for a follow-up email or, again, subscribe to one of our notification services on Cluein. And if you happen to be one of the lucky people replaying the recorded version of today's webinar, I want to thank you for sticking all the way to the end. And I will now remind you that in the upper right on the recorded version of today's seminar, there is a handy link to the seminar homepage and the seminar feedback form so that you can still fill out the feedback form and get a certificate based off of your replay of today's session. With that, I want to echo the thanks to all of the participants who joined us for today's live session, interacted with our speakers, and shared some great questions and comments. And I want to thank all of the organizers and presenters who took time to share their expertise. With that, we'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast. Thank you so very much for joining us.